Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. Coming to you every day.
Welcome back to the Reset Rebel podcast with me, Jo Yule, and for today's episode number 229, we're actually overlooking what used to be space. We've just been talking about that on a panel in Playa Soleil, which of course used to also be Bora Bora, as we were celebrating 20 years of Ibiza Sonica, my very first radio job on the island when I came here 13 years ago. And I've just been hosting a panel called the Ibiza Chronicles with my old boss, Christian Len-Rosal, who is now author of the book Balearic. So he was talking about Ibiza's history and club culture. But today I'm joined by the other lady on the panel, Aura Gold, who's created We Love Ibiza, the very first island comic, which documents the entire history, not just of the club culture, but the island itself, right back from 155 million years ago. Aura, welcome to the Reset Rebel.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
I didn't think we'd be sitting here in Playa del Bosque for this chat. We've been talking about doing this for a while, but here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Why not? Now is the moment.
I thought we'd be sort of surrounded by reprobates, but actually we're sitting in the Passion Cafe. We'll give it a little mention. There's actually everyone's looking reasonably well put together, I think, for this hour of the day in peak summer.
Yeah, it's not bad, and it's nice and cool in here too. Yay, Passion.
Just big up to Ms. Alana Love, who we love very much on this podcast. I used to do her detox programs many, many moons ago. So this is sitting in front of us, the physical copy. It's been a long time in the making. We've been talking about having this conversation for a very, very long time, quite some years. And you were sort of in the midst of, obviously, getting the book actually done and dusted, which I'm sure was no mean feat. So this is obviously the first book in five editions that takes us from 155 million years ago up until 1979. How did you decide how to sort of timeline this whole process?
So originally I was creating one book, and then I quickly understood that it would be an extremely long book, and then it would be really hard to print such a big book, quite expensive. So then it was going to be three books, and I think when it was going to be three books, I can't remember how I was going to split it. Well, first of all, when it was three books, I was starting in 1954, because that's when Las Dalias opened. And then someone goes to me, well, why are you starting in 1954? And I realized that my answer wasn't good enough. So then I went back to 155 million years ago. So then it became even longer. And so then I split it into five. And actually, I think it was G. Moore from Bora Bora who helped me split it up, because he knows a lot about Ibiza. And so this one goes up to 1979, because once we get to 1980, everything changes quite a lot, from the music to the people to the drugs. Everything's in this book. It's not censored. And I feel like 1979 was a bit of an end of an era, because New Wave came around in 1979. Disco started to peter out. And at the beginning of the 80s, you got the first house music. And so book two goes from 1980 to 87, and we stopped at 87 because that's when some British DJs came over, Danny Rampling, Paul Oakenfold, and they found Amnesia, and they spread the word to the UK, and then there was an influx of Brits coming over. So from 88, book three is 88 to 98, starts at 98, Acid House Revolution, and just this massive explosion. Book three could, I don't know how I'm going to fit book three into one book, but let's give it a go. It might end up being two books, because I might finish in 93 and then start part two in 94, because 94, Manumission was here, Cream was here, Clockwork Orange was here. It just exploded. And then book five starts 99 and goes to 2010. 99 Cocoon, Minimal, DC10, well, it's called 2000. And so each book is roughly about 8 to 10 years. I figure like that's a sort of a good amount. I wasn't really planning to go past book four, but I think I've got to. So book four will be 2011 to 2020. And that's another important book, because social media, Instagram, phones. This is when it all changed all over again. Beach clubs. And then I guess there'll be a book six, because by the time I finish book five, it'll be ready to bring out book six. So, yeah. That's it in a nutshell, really. Like, I've got a lot of work to do. But it's really fun. Like, it's been a very daunting process at times, but in all honesty, it has been so much fun. We just need to now make sure, like, book one's the hardest one to sell because it's the oldest book. It's book one. You know, people have never seen the series before. But if we can just get this rolling, it's ticking along, then we'll have enough money to complete book two and print book two. So, yeah.
One step at a time. I mean, you know, it's no mean feat. I mean, this is like, you know, huge kind of coffee style, beautiful, heavy, incredibly illustrated book, something that I would definitely like to have on my coffee table. So I'm definitely going to get myself a copy. I think, you know, we were just talking about on the panel, because I had Carlos Matare on this podcast series Once Upon a Time. It's one of the oldest residents of the island. I think he came over here from either Madrid or Barcelona. It was quite a lot of episodes ago. I lose track this far down the line, but I remember him saying, you know, he was responsible for bringing one of the very, very first plane loads of people over to the island way back when, before Pacha even started. And he was a very major sort of like linchpin, really, of the Pacha story. So I kind of wonder, you know, from your research that you've done, you've probably obviously gone a bit deeper than I have into the history of Ibiza and its club scene and how it all kind of started up. But I wonder, like, in your opinion, which is technically the oldest club in the island? Some people say Las Dalias, some people say Lolas, some people say you know, all sorts of other options, and I'm wondering, in your opinion, which one was actually technically the first?
Lola's claims it is the first club, and it might be correct because it has been around an awful long time. But there was a club called Portal New, excuse my pronunciation, which a lot of people have never heard of. It was mainly for local people, and it was inside the walls of Dolt Villa. And I think it became a bit mythological, you know, because people talked about it. There was this club in the walls of Dolt Villa, we can't remember what it was called. And actually, I did find it, and I found a DJ resident from the time. And they actually had like a 7-day festival there. I think it was called Hi-Fi Festival, where for 7 days they had bands, and they even had the winner of the Eurovision Song Contest for Spain, Salome, something like that. And so I wonder if it probably came around about the same time. It's just lesser known. But then you had like, there was other clubs that also, there was quite a few clubs that opened in the 50s, but they were not how you imagine a club is. Like, they had an orchestra, and if a place had a nightclub license, people were allowed to dance and touch each other, and if you didn't have a nightclub license, that was not allowed. Yeah, so there were some other nightclubs. They just weren't really how we imagine nightclubs were, but Lola's was. Lola's had like cages that people danced in, and they had a carousel horse outside, and they had a padded door on the toilet.
A padded cell.
And that's actually, there was this lady on the front, Jonis. She was a model for Paola's Boutique, opened by Armin and Stuart. And so Armin met Jonis in Lola's. She was dancing in a cage, and that's how he met Jonis. And also, earlier on, Christian told you about Jeanne, who created the first tanga. She was also a dancer in Lola's. And Jeanne, the funny thing about Jeanne, she had never been in a nightclub before. She didn't even know what a nightclub was. And that was her first job. She went on to, she basically, I think, invented the tanga. And people always think it came from Brazil, but actually one of her first customers, well, she created them for friends at the first. He went to Brazil and wore his tanga on the beach, and he got arrested. Nobody in Brazil was wearing tangas back then. So I really think that Jeanne created the tanga.
Don't actually know what a tanga is. I was like, when Christian said it, I was like, what is this man talking about?
So a tanga is like a small bikini bottom, not like a thong, sort of in between a full bikini bottom and a thong, somewhere in between there. And she made
learned something new today.
She made them out of bed sheets. Yeah, she made them out of bed sheets.
Of course she did.
She's an incredible woman, and she started selling them for she started just giving them away because people were asking them. And Carlos Martorell was like her second customer or something. Because nudism became illegal, and so to find a solution, that was her solution to the whole nudism rule. And so then she started selling them for like 60 cents. And she had a kiosk down at Salinas for a long, long time. And now she's got a shop in Formentera. Yeah, and she lives here. She lives down near Escobel. She bought her own land. She built her own house. She's quite a woman, Jan. I haven't met her yet. I'm going to go and deliver her a comic book this week. But yeah.
So what's her name?
Jan. She calls herself Jana B, so I don't know her surname. But her story's in the comic as well.
So does she know about this? Have you emailed? Have you had any contact with her at all?
Yeah, I've interviewed her. And she's got so lots of people who I interviewed. They wrote a guest page for me. So this is Jean here with her husband and her daughter. They're still married. Jasmine, her daughter's called.
Where's she from?
Is she Dutch?
She looks Dutch. She's obviously blonde.
Dutch or Denmark or somewhere. I can't remember. Sorry.
She works in a shop in Formentera.
Well, that's her shop in Formentera now. She lives here, but that's her shop in Formentera.
What's the name of the shop?
Jean Ibiza.
Okay, I'm going to have to pop over there.
Yeah, and this is her kiosk at Salinas Beach.
Kiosk. It's like an umbrella with lots of bits and bobs under it, dangling off of the spokes.
And we've got her story here.
That's so funny. She sounds like an absolute legend. I mean, I don't know how you decided who to include and who not to. I mean, there's quite a massive, massive selection of caricatures that exist on this island.
Yeah, I mean, it just sort of, the story sort of told itself.
Danish. She's a Danish beauty.
There you go.
From Denmark.
Yeah. And you've got, so this is...
Jan Higard. I don't know how you pronounce it, but she came up with the tanga.
This is the story of her first customer when he went to Brazil. He ended up getting arrested.
Wow, that's incredible.
So this is the nudism story you're looking at here. So they made nudism illegal, and the hippies would pretend that they were basically taking a crap when the police came along, and the police would be like, together, and they'd be like, yeah, together. And so then when they realised that they couldn't really ban nudism because it was all the hippies just wanting to be nude, they then made select beaches nude. And so that's Ariel Marsfond's famous photo. So Salinas was not nudist, but Playa Caballet, sorry, which is where pronunciation was. And then when nudism did become legal, then the locals got involved in it too. So you'd get farmers down there, but they'd leave their shoes and socks on. And I don't think their wives were nude. So I think their wives were trying
That's
to
That's a unique and very novel look. My God.
I know, right?
I mean, it's just sort of like the absolute antithesis of what you want to happen in the bedroom, isn't it? A man getting into bed with his socks on like that. But that's something else on the beach.
But you had all states of undress at the beach then. You had people in sarongs, tangas, shoes and socks, nude, bikinis. Anything went, really. Anything always has gone in Ibiza. Yeah, this is Playboy 2. So I interviewed Juan Suarez, who's now a journalist. He was, I think he's the ex-editor of Diario, and now he's gone back to journalism. So he was a DJ from Playboy 2, and he had many different personas. He'd get dressed up, he'd spin records on his finger.
Hang on, let's go back to this story about Playboy, because you told me on the panel earlier, which obviously no one was present at. So can you tell me about this club called Playboy that Pepe Roseo started out in the 60s?
Yeah, it's in the 60s. So before that, he did actually have... He also had bars. He had, like, Bar La Reja, which was really good live jazz music. He had some others as well. Sorry, I've got so many stories in my head, it's sometimes hard to remember what's what. Let me just find... I must have gone past it. Sorry, 1 second. So he opened Playboy in the 60s. And he sort of created a different kind of clubbing experience. So first of all, he did have Playboy bunnies in there, and so he had, you know, if you think in the 60s, he had women there in Playboy bunny outfits. Now that was very risque for back then, like that was just, you just didn't do that back then. And he also introduced Miss Playboy contests, but they weren't in bikinis, they were in more like cocktail dresses and ball gowns and stuff. Then he also introduced games. So I looked in his book and there were some really cool photos. People with their head on the top of the broom handle spinning around. Women feeding men with baby milk. It was kind of, I felt like he sort of like created like an 1830 thing. I felt like he was the 1830 instigator. I don't know if you like it if I say that, but that's kind of what it feels like. And then the police would go in, and if they couldn't read the newspaper, they'd close the club down, which I thought was hilarious.
Say that again.
If the police came in and they could not read the newspaper in the club,
why would they need to read the newspaper?
Because they didn't want it to be too dark, because in a dark club people can get up to no good.
Oh my god,
it was Franco times, you know. And Pepe had
that is the most ridiculous litmus test I've ever heard of.
Well, it gets even crazier. So foreign records were really expensive to import, so a lot of them got smuggled in. And so Pepe had a really good record collection, and he'd protect it by putting the DJ in a cupboard or somewhere. No one saw the DJ back then. Like, people, you didn't know where the music was coming from. There'd just be some speakers. You wouldn't see this guy because he didn't want to expose his record collection. Now, eventually, his record collection got seized. His record collection got seized because they said he hadn't paid customs on it. And then they auctioned the records off, 500 records. So he bought them back. It's all in his book. So he bought them back. So then he had 500 legal records.
And so who auctioned them off?
The police.
That is absolutely outrageous.
They were like seized goods. So the club just bought the books back. And so then he had a certificate to say, well, these records are legal. So then he could put the DJ out in the open. And then he just made sure there was only ever 500 records.
That's an absolutely incredible story.
I know, right? Like, it's just nuts. And here's the Portal New discotheque. I've got some great photos here. So that's the UFO that sat out in the garden.
Breakfast has arrived. We're going to have to take a short pause. Hang on. Well, I've completely lost my thread after that very delicious smashed avocado and poached egg on toast. I think we were talking about Pepe Rosario and obviously him reclaiming his records, people drinking baby milk out of very strange bottles. This is all news to me. I'm glad I asked, actually.
And the funny club rules, like be able to read the newspaper, otherwise the club was deemed too dark and they'd close it down. They actually had a disco inspector. That was the job, disco inspector, and his job was to make sure the music wasn't too loud, the club wasn't too dark, and people weren't getting up to no good.
How times have changed.
I know. And I think he was a bit of like an undercover policeman. And I know he drove a white car, and that's all I know about him. People wouldn't disclose his identity. And so I took a spin on that because I was like, okay, well, it's a bit boring, right? Because that's not really how I want to present the book. So I created my own disco inspector. And actually, it's a friend of mine. And I made my disco inspector all about, you know, making sure the vibe is good, making sure the sound is on point, making sure the sound is loud enough. And he looks a bit like Inspector Gadget. So I have taken some artistic license in the book. I mean, I have said in the book, you know, this isn't actually true. So here's my disco inspector. So he looks a bit like Inspector Gadget. And there he is choosing which disco suit he's going to wear. Going to be a big night, only the disco ball suit will do. And then he gets a call, disco inspector, we need your help, the vibe here is bad, the music is terrible, come quick. And off he goes in his disco ball car, and he gets there and it's like it's worse than I thought. And I've got the ladies swooning after him, oh my god, it's him, oh my god, it's going to be a superb night. And there he is, you know, tweaking the sound, getting the vibe in check, getting the music in check, and everyone's having a good night.
I think you could practically make this into like a Netflix series, and you could be like the cartoon caricature and voiceover.
I would actually love to do that. I've already contacted somebody. But the thing is, the way we've created the artwork, it's very hard to animate, because ideally when you animate something, you need every element on a different layer. And because we created this and we didn't want to spend that much time on it, like it took a long time already, but to break it into layers would have taken even longer, you see. But I think I'm going to create a YouTube series and put it on YouTube first and split it up into like 5 to 8 minute sections so people can go and watch the book. And maybe you could even like read along with the book and the YouTube. And then we could put music on there. Yeah, there's so much different opportunities.
I mean, I could definitely, you know, there's a few things already in there that I'd like to have. Like, I can see, like, T-shirts as well and merch and bags and all sorts of things.
And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to, like, build a brand and we'll just see where it goes. I'm just sort of open to... This is a cool story. So nudism was illegal on Aguas Blancas Beach. And so the police would be undercover, in inverted commas. But, you know, they didn't look like hippies. But they'd wear sarongs.
I bet they were just enjoying themselves.
Well, I don't know, but they'd wear sarongs and they'd have a gun under their sarong.
Oh, right.
And, you know, they'd be, like, clean shaven and everything. Because back then you couldn't really have a beard because beards were associated with piracy and being a criminal. So they were very clean shaven. So they were very easy to spot.
In which department? I'm not sure. Sorry, couldn't resist. Too good.
So, you know, they were easy to spot. So the hippies would spot them a mile off. And we've just done some funny scenes here. But then there was this big storm. I don't know if this story is true, and I have mentioned this, but apparently there was a big storm. Lots of trash washed up on Aguas Blancas Beach. And the hippies helped clean it up. And then it became a nudist beach. And I don't know if that is true, but I quite like the story. So we included that in there.
We should just do a naked beach clean to launch this comic.
We should. And I've got Alfredo coming. So he came in 76. He actually started off sewing clothes and making candles. And he loved going to Glory's. Unfortunately, I didn't get to interview him. I sent him a message before he got sick. And he sent me a message back and he was in Paris. And then shortly after that, he got ill. And so I never got to actually talk to him. But I've spoken to his son, Jaime, and I've showed Jaime the comic. I actually made Jaime... I took all the elements that we created of Alfredo and we made him like a one-page comic strip. So I gave that to Jaime just...
Oh, that's so gorgeous.
Because I could, you know.
I think he used to be a journalist before he came to Ibiza.
In Argentina, yeah. He was a journalist. He read about music. And then he escaped Argentina because it was very dangerous to be there. And also in the same year, Javier Mambo's arrived, and he started off as a barman. That was in 76 as well.
What's the travesty there on the poster? Glory's.
Yeah, Glory's. This is from Flip Music, which was the second record store to open. And so I found some photos, and that was a poster on the back wall. And this is Diego. He passed he passed about a month or so ago. And that's one Rebus DJ. He'd always buy his music in there.
I mean, this is actually insane. I cannot believe how much detail you've got in here in terms of the storytelling. It's like literally like the best history book I've definitely ever seen of Ibiza, for sure.
It's got so much in it. Here's Tony Pike is my favourite character so far because he was just born to be in a comic book. He just really was. And he arrived after a 48-hour bender.
He arrived. Of course.
Of course. And he came across what we now know as Pikes. And it was called Campepton Toniette, which means House of Little Tony. So he was like, oh, it's meant to be. And then he had no power and he had no running water. So he stole power from the San Antonio generator. So I've got him here with a plug that goes to Pikes. And he built himself a toilet, just dug a hole by underneath a pomegranate tree outside, and then furnished it with the best toilet seat he could find. And so we've got him there. And then he, you know, he just, like, Pikes was just ruins. So, you know, he did the electrics, plastering, he sewed curtains, and they planted this bougainvillea, which is still there outside, above the door that goes, the going to Pamela's.
I didn't know he was such a handyman.
I think he was a handyman. Some people told me he got his girlfriend to do all the work, but in his book he says he did all the work, so I really liked his book. And I think he was pretty handy. I don't know if you've read his book, but his book is great. It goes right from when he was a kid in England, and then goes all through his life. A great book. And he had like an old traditional oven, so he'd cook big lamb roasts and invite all the local people. You know, he was like a magnet for people. Oh, we got Bob Marley in here, 1978. He was paid with a kilo of ganja and 10 kilos of whitefish on arrival.
I did a whole episode of the Reset Rebel about the history of that gig, when I interviewed the photographer that was waiting for him on the tarmac and the guy that booked him, and I did not know that he was paid with a kilo of ganja.
He was. That's how he was paid. And then an official.
Are you actually sure?
100%. And then an official came down, because I spoke to somebody about this. I can't remember his name, but he was a Spanish guy. He was involved with the booking of it. But an official came, because everybody was so stoned, and he was like, we need to shut this down. Everybody's on drugs. But everybody was so stoned that nobody listened to him. And of course, the event continued. And then Bob Lally died a year later, unfortunately. And they made that mosaic on the floor to commemorate him. And then the ball ring was pulled down in 2005.
Yeah, but such a shame that mosaic is not a happy camper. I went there not so long ago, and there's quite a few little tiles missing, and it's not looking so good.
Oh, that's a shame. But yeah, this is the original poster. That's a ticket. Oh no, that's a poster. And then that's the stage being set up. That's the ball ring. Eric Clapton played there as well.
There's so many rock stars that came here that we don't really get to sort of know about the other side of the music history of the island. It's always obviously dominated by this electronic music scene. But of course, you know, Bob, and then for sure, Eric. Who else?
In book two, we've got Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, Freddie Mercury, Julio Iglesias. We've got like the whole story. So who's the guy from the Royal? There's another rock star. What's his name? Can't remember. From the Rolling Stones. Anyway, I can't remember, but we've got the whole story around the Heartbreak Hotel, which is where Jimmy Page and Robert Plant would go and play. So, and you know, it would just be a rumour that they're going to go and play. And I spoke to Chris Lee. He was a musician here for a long time, so he told me the story that he heard they were playing, and him and his mate ran down to Heartbreak Hotel and got to see them perform. And they just said they'd sing any song, but just not Led Zeppelin. They're split up by them. What have we got next? Oh, they've got, towards the end of the book, we've got the opening of Ku. So, you know, we go into why it's called Ku. It's named after the Hawaiian god with a rather large appendage. And, of course, they had a slide, the snake slide, going into the pool. And this is Brasilio. He was the creative director.
Who doesn't want a snake slide going into the pool? That's that's amazing.
Apparently, in later years, he lost a tooth. Rather wild night, so my face.
Wow. I mean, I just love it.
He started Coco Loco Bar, and then Ku became the first polysexual nightclub, you know.
What year did Ku begin?
Before that, it was Club San Rafael, and then I think it became Ku in 78. And they already had a nightclub in Spain called Ku. And Carlos Motorell, who you spoke about earlier, he created lots of different theme parties, mostly for Pacha, but he did this one for Ku. And it was a funeral party for the Mediterranean. And so everybody dressed up like they were coming to a funeral. These drawings are from actual photos. So that's Armin and Stuart from Paola's. And Carlos was like the priest, and he carried a giant fish. Bottles in the pool and stuff. And so they had this big ceremony. And then afterwards, there was, of course, like a wake and a massive, great big party.
I think this idea came from the fact that, you know, he was here. I mean, you know, when they were literally just like shacks, and people used to leave like notes for each other pinned onto their doors. And, you know, just everybody was getting together every single night and getting together for dinner. And he would go swimming in the sea every single day. And then one day he was swimming and he saw a plastic bottle. And that is when he realized that, you know, this was going to be the death of the water as we know it in its crystalline form. And luckily he was kind of wrong, thanks to the Posidonia. But I love the fact that you've got all these plastic bottles in the water there, and I remember him telling me that story on this podcast.
We have taken a bit of artistic license here.
There's a lot of plastic in that sea there.
Well, there had to be a wake afterwards. In my eyes, there was definitely a big party afterwards, but yeah. Perhaps it didn't quite happen like this.
I think my funeral should look a bit like that, actually. I think I'd be quite happy with that. Thank you for that.
This is Amnesia. When Amnesia started, it was a live music venue. So I spoke to Brian Ian Walter, and they worked with all the music groups that came over. And I met Dennis Herman, who was the sound engineer. and they soundproofed Amnesia with egg boxes. And everyone kept getting electrocuted because of course all the electrics. I mean, even now the electrics are terrible here. So that's this is Bryony and Walter and what a musician getting electrocuted. And they brought over a Welsh band called the Racing Cars. And of course they're Welsh, so no one could understand a single word they said, but the music, you know, the music was great. And here we've got Manolo Diaz, who's probably still one of the island's best guitar players, with Ben Sweeney and Lynn Stant. They would perform a lot there. I interviewed Lynn Stant. I actually interviewed all those three guys.
So you've done something with Amnesia then, have you, for their 50th birthday, I hear?
Yeah, we made... I had a meeting with them, and they loved the comic book. And they asked me if I would create something, because they had an art exhibition at IMS this year. So we created them a comic of their 50 years. Obviously, not in as much detail as we'll go into in future books. But you know, like, we've got like the early days of being a live music venue, and then we introduced Alfredo, and Alfredo had this epiphany that we should open later and stay later. And that changed Amnesia completely, and it became an underground club of Ibiza, and then the Acid House Revolution started, and then the roof went on, and then we drew them extra panels of like Espuma, Cocoon with Sven Vass, Queen with Paul Van Dyk, Pyramid with Ricardo Villalobos and Richie Horton, and then we end with their closing party for 2025, which was Luciano and Josh Baker. And then we animated it for them. So if you go on Instagram, there's a really cool animation of the whole comic. So that will be in their 50th anniversary book, which I think they're launching this year.
Wow.
Yeah, I felt very flattered that a big brand came along and was like, this is really cool. I never really imagined that this book would go that far. And then we created something for Cocoon and Sven. We just animated, we created this comic panel, and then we animated it, and then they posted it. And you know, like, it was just nice to see people really liking it. It's quite surreal, actually, when I went to a party a while ago, and the person whose birthday it was got gifted my comic book. And then I watched it getting passed around the party, and people like smiling and laughing at it. And it was a nice feeling, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, when you first told me about it, or I first heard about you making this, I really had no idea what to expect. I certainly didn't expect it to be a book of that quality and standard. And it has such a nice finish. I mean, it's, you know, it's incredible. I'm really seriously impressed with the amount of research that you've done. And I think that's going to have to be a nice place to finish this interview, because I have to go and interview Roger Sanchez for the 20th anniversary of Sonica. But it's been an absolute joy to listen to all this storytelling, and I'm so happy that it's getting the support that it is, because it absolutely deserves it. And congratulations. I mean, part one of a five-part series, so no doubt we'll have you back on again, maybe when you launch the next one.
Yeah, thank you so much. And if anyone is interested in buying it, if you just search We Love Ibiza comic book on Amazon Spain, Italy, England, Holland, you'll find it. Yeah.
Thank you, Aura Gold. It's been an absolute pleasure. And yes, we will see you next time.
Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. Coming to you every day.